I feel like we should have some intro music or something that that gets tiring after 4 days.
It does.
But then you get that itch and you want it back again.
It's CBS College Basketball. Oh, who do you think will win?
That isn't the actual lyrical
yeah, is it? CBS College Basketball, let's do a bracket. Who do you think will win? Maybe my school will win. Let's play hoops.
There you go. You learn something new every day.
Or not.
He is Dave Preston. I'm Noah Frank. We are back 2 rounds later. We had a feeling there would be a few things that we would get wrong. We got some things wrong. We got some things right. But we're going to kind of recap the weekend that was. Favorite moments, kind of biggest surprise out of the weekend, and then look ahead at Maryland and Virginia, both of whom are still dancing, and kind of maybe some of the other things that are out there, some possible permutations of events that we never would have thought possible a week ago. So let's start it off. What was your favorite moment out of opening weekend?
There were a lot of different mini moments, but just the buzzer beaters. Saturday night, there was a sequence where I believe it was St. Joe's held off Cincinnati, a dunk that did not count, and that was right after Northern Iowa beat Texas on a half-court buzzer beater, after Texas had just tied up the game with less than 5 seconds to play. And that just shows the instant that everything can change on a dime. And for those who try to pick games and it's a fun thing to do, please know that your, I guess, genius is beholden to 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21-year-olds on a crazy night. Though that's the little moment right there that sticks out of my mind. Biggest surprise, of course, Michigan State not just losing to Middle Tennessee, but never leading in the game at all. Big loss for the Spartans. I had them winning the national championship.
I am going to the national championship. So, I mean, I think a lot of people had them in their Final Four. I know just looking at our various brackets, looking through the pools, they seem to be about a 30% pick to win the national title. So arguably the biggest upset in tournament history. We've never had a 16 beat a 1. A lot of people thought Michigan State should have been a 1, you know, that they were on that kind of a line, that they were a top 4 team in the nation. You could make the case that is the greatest upset in tournament history, certainly in terms of a first round game. I got to say, you know, every year I look through and I especially look at the KenPom numbers and I try to figure out where are those upsets that are lying in wait. And I had two teams that I really, really liked, and then the brackets came out and I just hated their matchups. And I couldn't bring myself to pick either one of them.
And they were?
And they were Arkansas, Little Rock.
Oh.
And Stephen F. Austin. And if I'd picked Stephen F. Austin, I was taking them to the Sweet 16, which they very nearly made.
Right.
So even though I didn't pick those teams, watching them both win, I felt like it was that was my favorite thing is watching those teams that, you know, you've watched them and you've seen them play and you've seen them be good enough. And it could have been Monmouth. You know, teams that you've kind of kept an eye on all year and they sort of vindicate your opinion of them by coming into the tournament and getting it done.
And Noah, the way that the bracket broke over the weekend, we had those upsets Thursday and Friday, but they were 5 seeds and below losing for the most part, with the exception of Michigan State. So by the time you got to the weekend, you still had those top 4 and top 5 seeds advancing. I think the biggest surprise is that with all the upsets, the Stephen F. Austins, the Little Rocks, the Middle Tennessees, we basically have a name brand Sweet 16. 10 of the top 16 seeds remain, and that doesn't include 2 number 5s, and those 4 or 5 games are virtual coin flip games. Outside of that, you've got a Wisconsin team that's made 2 straight Final Fours, a Notre Dame team that almost beat Kentucky last year, Gonzaga, which is big of a name brand team as you can have at the mid-major level, and a Syracuse school that made the Final Four just 3 years ago. So for all the upsets, a lot of it is meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah, I mean, arguably the biggest surprise is all the 1 seeds made it through all right. St. Joe's definitely tested Oregon and really kind of had them on the ropes. They had a really bad turnover with about 4 minutes left, up 7, when they had all the momentum, and it all just slowly kind of leaked away from them at that point. But yeah, absolutely. To point to one thing as a biggest surprise, has to be, I didn't actually think that the math worked to be down 12 with 44 seconds to play and be
able
to force overtime.
Yeah, that's going to hang with those kids, unfortunately, for a long time, because they went from beating Texas on a buzzer beater to losing in just the worst possible way.
And sort of lost in that whole shuffle, they had a senior who was their inbounder, he's the guy who makes those passes when you need them, and he got hurt with about a minute to play and missed that last minute. And that made all the difference in the world. They couldn't get the ball in bounds into the right spot. A&M wasn't even like hitting desperation threes. They were getting to the bucket and getting layups. I think they hit, what, 1-3 in that 12-point stretch or something
like
that? One
of those inbounds passes that was stolen looked like an inbounds to the Texas A&M player from one of his teammates, except it was from the kid from Northern Iowa.
Yeah, it was just brutal. And you don't expect that out of a team with three seniors, a team that's been there before, but that's why we watch. These games are nuts sometimes. And so A&M, which is, you know, potentially a dangerous team, moves on to the Sweet 16. So now that we're looking at this, we'll get to some particulars in a minute, but Maryland advances. Maryland sort of survives a late collapse against South Dakota State that came down to potentially, you know, a game tying three that South Dakota State had the ball, their point guard had fouled out and turned the ball over. The backup turns the ball over in the final seconds, within one possession, and then they get a Hawaii club that really kind of got almost a bye with Cal because they're missing two starters and you know, kind of had a tailor-made upset for them in the first round. So we've seen them beat a 12 and we've seen them beat a 13. What do we really know about Maryland at this point?
We know that they have a lot of different guys who can produce on different days, and I think when you look at a tournament like this, you've got six potential games. Maryland's a team that you've got a Jake Layman who he has 27 points against South Dakota State. Maybe he never scores 27 again in his career, but he was there for that one game. You've got a Jared Nickens who can knock down some threes in one game, but then all of a sudden you won't see him for a few more games, but that's when the Diamond Stones, the Rashid Sulemans, step up and hit big threes. Melo Trimble looks a little bit better than he did the last couple games of the regular season. I think his assist-to-turnover ratio was just not good at all for a guy who plays the point in the last eight games of the season where they had gone 3-5. He's getting some of those calls he didn't get in the Big Ten season. I think he's been to the free throw line 23 times over the first two games of the tournament, and they're going to continue to need him to get strong to the basket, get some of those calls, and establish their offense in that way.
Kansas is very, very good. Kansas is pretty much the consensus best team in the country. Doing what they did in the Big 12, winning other big games just throughout the year. They were one of those teams that you know, is so strong at home and not nearly as strong in neutral and road sites. But Maryland has not beaten a team of Kansas's caliber, and really of anywhere close to Kansas's caliber this year. The best teams they've beaten are their fellow Big Ten teams. They didn't have a really great non-conference win. What gives you confidence that they can beat Kansas?
Confidence is that they have talent. They have a Diamond Stone who is yet to really... He hasn't had a good game, I think, since maybe mid-February when he had a double-double against Nebraska. And really, his signature game was the Big Ten opener against Penn State, 39 points, 12 rebounds. Since then, he's been all right, but he has yet to have that monster game. That would give me confidence is that Diamond Stone is due. Robert Carter Jr. is a guy who can help match up in size. Same with Jake Layman. They can match up size-wise with this Kansas team. They just need to actually go out and out-rebound this Kansas team because the most frustrating thing about this Maryland team this winter has been that despite their size, even their guards are big, they don't out-rebound the opposition. And when they go up against a team with like-minded size like a Purdue, they get crushed on the glass. That would be what concerns me. What gives me confidence is they do have talent. They have guys who can probably play at the next level and who are due.
Yeah, if Stone can kind of neutralize Ellis, if they can just, you know, that matchup doesn't really impact the game, you got to think that works in Maryland's favor. That's maybe, to me, the one that sticks out the most is they really need Diamond Stone to hold his own against a much more seasoned player in Perry Ellis.
Perry Ellis is such a fantastic player, too, even though I think he has a clothing line.
Right.
I'm not sure.
He might be 38 years old.
Perhaps. Because I think I saw him play against Georgetown. It was either 1 or 2 years ago. He had a decent game, and you thought that he would have moved on. These are the teams that win where they get that one kid who was a borderline draft pick who stuck around for that third or maybe even fourth year. I think that's what Maryland hoped that Melo Trimble would be coming back this year. He could have gone to the NBA last year. They hoped that this year would be his bump year, and he's had a decent year, but not a great year.
So that game is Thursday. That would be today as you're listening at 9:40 p.m. on the big network on CBS. Looking to the other half of the bracket, Virginia has taken care of business. They got a bit of a test from Butler after rolling over Hampton in their first game. What did you see from them, especially in that second game? What did you like? What maybe concerns you going up now against a very veteran, prolific offensive Iowa State team?
What you have to like about how Virginia's played is just they're approaching every game and the way that they go through their offense. They're not in a hurry to get anywhere, but they're able to make the necessary push when needed against Butler. And I think Butler provided a very interesting test because the Bulldogs are a little bit more up-tempo. They can threaten you more from the perimeter. And Virginia just played better down the stretch. They executed offensively in a way that you don't often see teams in tournament pressure. I think they made 18 to 25 shots in the second half. That doesn't happen very often. You know, Virginia has those stretches where they're just playing better together on a different level. And I think you get that when you have guys like Anthony Gill, Malcolm Brogdon, who've played together for 3-4 years. They have a certain cohesiveness that you don't often see in today's college game.
So you mentioned Gill, but really Brogdon, Parentes, the backcourt is really the best part of Virginia. That they thrive on their guard play. They've had some up and down, you know, success with their interior guys. Mike Toby sometimes looks like he's about to be a breakout star, sometimes disappears. Are you worried that Iowa State's best two players are George Niang, who's this sort of hybrid stretch four, you know, 6'7", kind of can really, really make life miserable for a traditional big man, and probably Morris underneath this sort of springy athletic center shot blocking. I mean, are you worried that maybe Iowa State's strength is Virginia's weakness?
It's, in a word, yes. I think, and a lot of what happens in the NCAA tournament is matchups, how well you fare up against a certain team. I thought that Iowa State might get knocked out by, say, or Purdue, and I was worried about Purdue's size going up against Virginia. Just goes to show that we don't know. But I think that's going to be a major challenge for Virginia. I think what has hurt them in the past couple weeks has been when they haven't been, they fall into funks every so often. And yes, Malcolm Brogdon is a great offensive weapon. Anthony Gill is great down low. But other than that, they really don't have anybody consistently. It's, you know, yes, Toby's great one game, but then you don't see him for 3 weeks. Wilkins, Hall, similar guys where, hey, wow, he had 15 points. This is his breakout game. And then he breaks back in for the next month. So somebody else outside of the power three of Gill, Brogdon, or Parentes really needs to step up and have a big game against Iowa State for them to advance.
Conventional wisdom is senior guards and seasoned guards win in March. So that seems to favor Virginia. We'll see if that holds true for that game. That game is Friday at 7:10 on CBS. So now that we have the Sweet 16 set, we still have all four one seeds. Certainly you could see a scenario where all the one seeds advance all the way to the Final Four, sort of, you know, as chalk would have it. But
I think it's only happened once in 08.
Yeah. I was going to say I guess it's more than 5 years ago now. I remember reading something about that coming into the tournament. But, you know, you could see favorites. You could see traditional programs. There's a number of names, as you mentioned, that would make a lot of sense. Wouldn't necessarily shock you. What's maybe a team that you think could sneak through just looking at the way that everything's sort of constructed right now?
I like the way Miami's been playing. They had a tough loss in the ACC tournament, but I like the way Jim Larrañaga prepares his team for tournament play. They have a decent Villanova squad that I had Villanova folding early because that's been their MO for the last 7 or 8 years. But then you look back, oh, that's right. They made the Final Four last decade under Coach Jay Wright. Nova's got a great backcourt. They've got the necessary skills to get them to the Final Four, but I just like the way the Hurricanes are playing right now. I also like Oklahoma from the standpoint of you've got a senior-laden class. You've got Buddy who can make every single shot in the book. I also like Duke just because they're very thin, but they only have to play once every other day as opposed to twice, three times in a week or three straight days. So their depth isn't going to be that much of an issue.
So going back to Villanova for a second, one of the things that stuck out to me and that I probably should pay more attention to, everyone thinks of Villanova as just being a three-point shooting team and that they lean on that. And then when that goes away, that's when they lose a game that they should win. But it turns out this year, their three-point shooting's basically right in the middle of the pack in the country, about 180 in the country in three-point percentage. Mm. And they're top five. Actually, I think they were top three in two-point percentage and free throw percentage, which are much more stable things. Those are much more stable metrics that are not going to abandon you, just because you're having an off night. If you're getting to the rim, if you're getting to the line, you're going to score well. So I actually think that Villanova is stronger than they've been in past seasons because of that, because they are able to generate points efficiently from not three-point range, from other places on the floor.
Can they be underrated in an overrated way?
Yeah, I mean, I still think that Kansas is it's so tough. I mean, whether they get Kansas or they get Maryland, yeah, even if they get past Miami, the South is so loaded at the top. I was just talking, but before we came in here, I like Oklahoma. I picked Oklahoma to win the whole thing before we started, and I still like them. I like the way they're playing right now. I like they survived sort of that the screwy game test from VCU when
VCU played very well. And I think just when the brackets came out, part of me as a fan was hoping to see Texas and VCU match up in the Sweet 16. Will Wade against Shaka Smart. That didn't happen, but both teams, the Longhorns and the Rams, played well going down.
Yeah. The one that really kind of sticks out to me that really doesn't seem that preposterous is what happens if Iowa State does beat Virginia, which they certainly could. They certainly have the talent to. And what happens if Gonzaga beats Syracuse? Gonzaga is a nightmare matchup for teams. They having both those big
they
guys.
Have height.
When they stay out of foul trouble, they've got 3-point shooting. They really had to sort of remake this team on the fly halfway through the season after they had injuries. I picked them to make the Sweet 16 because I really liked their early matchups. But I mean, if they break down the zone in Syracuse, they get the ball inside and they just beat up an undersized Syracuse team, I could see them doing the same thing to Iowa State. They might struggle against Virginia because Virginia will just sink in on them and force them to hit shots. But if Iowa State wins and they get past Syracuse, this might be Gonzaga's Final Four year.
Yeah,
and
who would
have
thought? Because they've been a top three or four seed and have come up short on multiple occasions. Even though they're the 11 and Syracuse is the 10, a lot of people are favoring the Zags in this contest. And it just goes to show that Gonzaga is a team that barely made the bracket. They lose in their conference tournament. Maybe they're St. Mary's looking to get to the Sweet 16 in the NIT as opposed to being in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, St. Mary's, by the way, if anyone actually cares about the NIT.
Oh, we all do. Washington in the mix.
They lost a heavyweight knockout game last night against Valpo on the road. They got held to 44 points. One of the better offensive teams in the country, just completely shut down in the second half.
One more thing about Virginia. What I like about them is the way they play defense. That's something that doesn't fluctuate unlike three-point shooting, unlike the emotions of a certain game. They lock down and they defend. And moving forward, I think against an Iowa State or against a Gonzaga or a Syracuse, just the way they defend consistently and how efficient they are on offense. They don't do a lot of crazy things, but they're very effective and sometimes boringly so, but sometimes boring wins games.
Speaking of boring and speaking of the NIT and defense, by the time you listen to this, GW will have played a home game Wednesday night at Smith Center against Florida, which is a very boring, very defensive-minded team. And if they survive that game, they will be off to the NIT Final Four.
Who would have thought GW might be the last team standing if Maryland and Virginia come up short this weekend?
Yeah, they very well could be. So, last thing, I know you picked Duke before we started with all this. You still like Duke to cut the Nets down?
I had Michigan State winning it all initially. I've got Duke losing to them in the championship game when Grayson Allen trips over himself because he's so effective at doing that. I had Kansas and UNC as the other two teams advancing. I think when you look at this Sweet 16, I I'm going to go with Kansas and UNC. I guess I should substitute. You hate to substitute the top seed for Michigan State and put Virginia in the mix. I do like Oklahoma, though, in the West. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm completely doing a reverse and trying to, you know, just get my hands up and distract because I'm completely lost in this tournament.
Well, I had Kentucky coming out of the East, so that all blew up in that Indiana game. Yeah, North Carolina, I thought they provided probably the toughest matchup for North Carolina, but now that's out of the way, I have a hard time seeing any of the remaining teams beating UNC. Indiana's defense is just not good enough, I don't think.
Six schools from the ACC, is that a big deal? Should we be making more of a big deal? Because it is the ACC that is a 15-team league as opposed to an 8- or a 9-team league back in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they got a little lucky in terms of their draws. You know, I mean, you look at Duke's draw. Duke has played the same as Maryland. They played a 12 and a 13. Yeah. You know, they haven't had to play a really tough game yet. You look at North Carolina's draw. Like Providence is fine, but like they're not a great team. Like, and you know, they're one seed, they deserved that. But
the highest seeded team I believe any ACC school has played was Dayton.
Yeah.
And that was Syracuse in the first round.
And you know, I mean Notre Dame should have lost that game to SFA. They got a couple, you know, favorable calls at the end, favorable no call on a clear out on that rebound before the tip in. It was, you know, but they were basically beaten by SFA. So let's see who goes to the Elite Eight. I think a lot of that's going to get thinned out as we move on here. I could easily see, you know, Nova beating Miami. I could easily see Oregon beating Duke. I could easily see, you know, as you go through, right, Syracuse losing and Notre Dame losing, and maybe there's only two teams in the Elite Eight, and then that looks about right.
So I've got Kansas, I've got Duke, I've got UNC, and instead of Michigan State, I'm going to sub in, I guess, Virginia, even though I didn't have them initially. I had Virginia losing to Michigan State in the Elite Eight. That would be my final four from this point.
Yeah, I like Kansas. I like OU. At this point, without a Kentucky to take out North Carolina, I like them coming through, and I'm gonna go with my wild and wacky. Maybe this is we finally get a little bit of flavor and say Gonzaga sneaks through and provides us our you know second weekend one shining moments kind of Cinderella story to hang our hats on it'd be fun. I think it'd be good for the game.
Only in America and in our NCAA tournament can we have a Cinderella story being a school that has made 17 straight NCAA tournaments. These little kids, these upstarts who have made the tournament for almost two decades straight, getting it done.
And it's funny, it's really not their best team that they've had that stretch.
No.
But I like their matchups. I liked them coming in, and I like them moving forward. So We'll see if they get it done. Thanks again for Dave Preston joining me, and I'm Noah Frank. Good luck. I hope you have something to root for left in your brackets going into the weekend, and if not, you at least have a Maryland game and a Virginia game Thursday and Friday.
And if not, the sheets make good kindling.